everybody. Welcome to my world. As crazy as it is, we've got guests tonight. And we've got a good show tonight. We've got a little comedy in there, too. So before we get going, I just want to welcome everybody to my world right here on the Trim Radio Network at trimradio.com. And I'll tell you what, we've got some new shows that are out there. And of course, My World is every Wednesday live at 8 p.m. So you want to check us out, okay? Before we get going, I have to do a disclaimer, because if I don't do the disclaimer, well, the big boss might be a little grumpy. So nothing in this show should be considered legal, medical, financial, or investment advice. Take what we say with a big grain of salt and always do your own research and due diligence. We're not responsible for and expressly disclaim all liability for damages of any kind arising out of use, reference to, or reliance on any information contained in this broadcast. Any persons or characters mentioned are, for the most part, fictional or as close to it as we can get. So sit back, relax, get your beverages out, and get your snacks out because, hey, we've got a good show for you tonight. Oh, hey, tell your friends about us too. We're on live every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Wow, what a week. Before we really get going into the show, our weather report is really nasty for tomorrow, which will be Thursday. And I wanted to go through a few things tonight, just a little bit on tornado safety, also with hail safety. Because the hail that we're going to get could go any place between a quarter of an inch beyond golf ball size hail, the way that they're talking right now. And it's a serious matter. Not only would your car get damaged, your roof would get damaged. You could even have broken windows if the golf ball size hailstones come down. So you want to be listening to the latest weather report. I don't care if you do Channel 2, Channel 7 on TV, or you listen to the National Weather Service. That's always a good one on the web. Personally, I take a look at something called Wonderground, weatherunderground.com, and you can see the progression of the storms over radar. It's great. It really is. So you want to check that out. There's also another one called Max Velocity, and he does his show on YouTube, and he's a very good weatherman. He's out of Florida, but he covers the whole United States, and he does several updates a day, and he's very good. So that's Max Velocity, V-E-L-O-C-I-T-Y, okay? All right, well, let's see what we've got here. Because I've got to talk about the Trim Radio Network, or the big bus, we get excited. Well, not really. Maybe peeved a little. I don't know. Anyhow, let's see what we've got here. Well, it jumped to the wrong page. The Trim Radio Network, we've got a nice group of shows that's out there, and the people responsible. Our brain trust, the Fab Four. We've got Michael Bayhaus, who's the founder and CEO. We've got Roscala Stefan, the chief operating officer. He's responsible for the day-to-day operations, and he's a computer guru. And then I guess I'm the chief relationship officer, and I still haven't figured that one out. And we've got Victoria Smith, who's the chief marketing officer. She's responsible for all the marketing activities and brand development and audience growth and creator acquisition strategies. She's the marketing person. If you're a club or business or fraternity or sorority, grade school, high school, I don't care. She is very good at marketing, and you need to watch her show because she has a show here too. Speaking of shows, we have Money and Change, and that's every Sunday at 7 p.m. And those shows are live, as are most of our shows. But if I have to play a concert, and I have six of them scheduled this year, I'll have to have an Encore edition, as Rush Limbaugh would call it. It's a replay. And I will put that up on our webpage for Money and Change. But Money and Change is every Sunday night at 7 p.m. We talk about how to save money, what's going on in the world of finance, what's going on in food expenses. Food's going to get expensive. And I just heard that the post office is going to raise their mailing rates for packages 8%. So you want to check that one out. And that's supposed to happen, I believe, April 1st. Great April Fool's Day present, isn't it? Okay, we've also got good old Michael Bejas, the boss. We have him doing Life Walk with Christ God. He's every Wednesday at 7 p.m., followed by My World, Live, Laugh, and Whatever. And that's at Wednesdays at 8. Then we have Victoria Smith's Natural Marketer Podcast. She's every Thursday, so you want to check her out. We also have Michael Bejas with Offsides, College Football, Top 25, and Friends, because he has other people on his show. And we have Positude Podcast. That's every Friday at 8 p.m. We have Adventure Awaits Around the Bend, Saturday at 1 p.m. We have Ranch It Up with Tigger and Beck at 1:30 in the afternoon. And then in the evening, we have Rascala's Red Pill Reality Show. And he has different guests on every week. And he does a fantastic show. It's from 9 p.m. until midnight. And I've been on the show a couple of times. We had some fun on the show. But we also had some serious topics, too. So you want to check him out. Rascala's Red Pill Reality Show. And I've known Rascala and Michael for quite a while. And, of course, we've got three blanks here, but we filled two, and they have to update these. The next one's going to be Revelation with Peter Kling, and that's going to be on Thursdays. And then we have Let's Talk About It with Dora Sherry. And I've known Dora for quite a while, and she's doing her own show. And so that will be on Tuesdays. I believe that's in the afternoon. And we still have a vacant space, so if you want to do your own show, hey, all you have to do is just let us know. And how do you do that? Well, you contact us. We're located in Irmo, South Carolina. And I'll tell you what, Irmo is a let's put it this way. It's one of those suburbs of Columbia, South Carolina. And Michael Bejas controls everything from Irmo, South Carolina. And Rascala and I are here in Ohio. Rascala's up in Cleveland. And I'm here in Western Ohio. And then we have Victoria, and she's down in Tennessee. So we've got people from all over. Also, you can call us at 1-803-303-8667. That's 1-803-303-8667. You can text us or voice us. Voice us? Oh, boy. I'm slipping tonight. You can also email us at info@trimradio.com. And the office hours are Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And we are closed on Sunday. Now, how can you support the show? It's very easy. We have collectibles. And here they are. We've got t-shirts. We've got hats. We've got mugs. We've got Money and Change t-shirts. We've got Money and Change insulated mugs with lids. We've got ceramic mugs. We've got piquet shirts. Okay? Those are neat shirts. We've got the regular t-shirts, Offsides, College 25, and Page 2. What do we got? Let's see what they have. Kids t-shirts. We've got black glossy mugs. We've got Rascala's Red Pill Reality Show mug. We've got Red Pill Reality t-shirts. We have the round mouse pads. And you can't corner a round mouse. I didn't say that right, did I? It's one of those nights. Did you bring your beverage? I believe one of the guests tonight has his beverage. I hope you all have it. I hope it's a nice beverage. This is water. with all the stuff I have to take due to allergies, and it's springtime, I have to drink a lot of water. Anyhow, Trim Creators Dad's Hat. We have beanies, we have ornaments, we have AirPod cases. You buy the AirPods and you put them in our cases after you buy them, okay? So we have those. And you can either buy the merchandise or buy the merch, as Michael says, or you can advertise, and we have very good advertising rates, very good rates. And you can also donate. It's your choice. And the money that we get goes into airtime, because airtime is not cheap. And so we have to pay for our airtime in order for everything to go out all over the world. Our shows go all over the world. And some of the shows that I do, I have listeners in Myanmar, which is Burma, India, South Africa, Kenya, come over to the northern hemisphere with the United States and Canada. And I have some people in Europe. So it's interesting. And so, you know, we go all over the world through our servers in Irmo, South Carolina. So just a little information. Wow, what else is going on? Here's our Facebook page. And that's the likeness of me. I've been messing around with artificial intelligence. Maybe they need that in Washington, D.C. I don't know. But anyhow, I was messing around with it and we came up with this one. I may change it later on. Who knows? But what we do with the show, in the comment section, anything that we're going to cover will be in that comment section. And let me bring it up here a little bit. We talked about weather last week because we had bad storms last week, and hail safety rules. We also go into a lot more things in tornado safety. Okay. So we post things right there. And if you want to join the group, let me know. I will add you to the group. It's very easy to do. You just contact us at info@trimradio.com. Wow. So much for the Facebook page. You know, I was talking about tornado safety. We were talking about tornado preparedness lists, and the American Red Cross has that. You just go to AmericanRedCross.org and take a look at everything. And if you don't speak English, they have it in different languages. I like to speak English because I basically understand it. Kind of, sort of, maybe. Anyhow, what to do before a tornado: find your shelters, practice your drills, plan to stay connected, take action when there's a warning, learn the emergency skills for life, first aid, CPR, things like that. Gather your emergency supplies. Do you have a tornado safety kit? They have a list. It's a go kit. And I'll tell you what I have will be flashlights, extra batteries, blankets, water, extra food, you know, like energy bars, things like that. Because when the tornadoes hit, the power goes down, it might be down for several days. Now, if you're lucky and you have a generator, you could be using the generator until the gasoline runs out or the propane runs out. So you have to be able to have power. You have to have gasoline. You have to have probably kerosene stored safely. But get your stuff together, because the weather tomorrow is not going to be nice. And you can get a bag from Walmart or other places, little backpacks, and you can put everything in the backpack and put it in a special place. Now, in the wintertime, when I'm on the road, I have a safety kit in the back, which is probably about a 2.5 foot long duffel bag loaded with all my winter supplies, just in case. And that's always in the trunk. And I don't take it out until I'm guaranteed that there's no snow on the ground. And then I change it over to a summer kit. So be prepared, please. Okay, What else is going on? Oh, I said we'd have a little comedy, didn't I? But before I do that, I got to tell you something. I always talk to people about GMRS radios. Why? Because in an emergency, you can contact people with the GMRS radios, and they come in very handy. This is an Ocean 935 G Plus with a Nagoya 771 antenna, 771G antenna for GMRS. And I'll tell you what, people say, well, what do I do with that? Well, you can call your relatives. You can call for help. There are different things you can do with these radios. You have to have a license. It's $35 for 10 years. That's $3.50 a year. You can't beat that. And anybody in your family can use the radios, the call signs and everything. It's great. Matter of fact, I was on with somebody today, and they were a newbie. You know what those are. You know, people that just get their radios, they don't know what they're basically doing. So they get on Facebook and ask for suggestions. And she said, well, I want to get a hold of the Dayton, Ohio repeater. How do I do it? So I sent her the frequency for it. And hopefully she can get that programmed into her radio. But I can sit here where I am, and I can talk to a repeater in Dayton, Ohio, 35 miles away. And from that repeater, I can go out another 90 miles. I've talked to people on the other side of Columbus. I've talked to people in Indiana, Southern Ohio, and I can get up to probably about Lima, Ohio, going to different repeaters. It's a fun hobby, but in an emergency, it's great for communication. And you won't get these radios at Wally World, better known as Walmart, or Costco. These you have to order from Better Safe Radio is one, and Buy Two-Way Radios is another company, and very good service. I don't get paid for saying this, but that's where I get my radios, and I have several. Why? Because in an emergency, if I have to set up some type of a network in our block or in our area, I can loan those radios out, and hopefully I get them back. They're very good radios, so check them out, GMRS Radios. I swear by him. I really do. Wow, a little comedy here. Emma, let's see what Emma's going to say today.
When the teacher says your baby talks too much, you've been saying it for years. You need to say, we're working on it at home. Even if you ain't, that's just good manners. Don't act shocked when your kid's the problem. You raised it. If you walk in ready to argue, maybe start by asking if your angel even turns in his homework. If you got to preface every sentence with, well, at home, he never. Stop. Just stop. We all know the difference between a spirited child and a disrespectful one. Yours is the second one. If your kid's been almost passing for the last 4 months, they're failing. Stop saying almost. That he's just borderline only works if he's also brilliant. He ain't. Don't ask the teacher for extra credit if your kid hadn't even done the regular credit. You can't expect accountability from a kid you still cut grapes for. If your kid's the reason she's on anxiety meds, you should bring her a gift. And the louder your kid is, the nicer the gift should be. That's just Southern math.
Yep. I've got one other one, and this is a good one. I saw this one today, and I just laughed. And this is artificial intelligence. Something that I guess they need in Washington, D.C. Well, actually, they need really good intelligence in Washington, D.C., but I won't go there. Anyhow, listen to this one.
Look, I got some bad news. I think we need to call it quits, and I want a divorce. Did you hear what I said?
Yes, I'm waiting on the bad news.
Oh, waiting on the bad news. Well, guess what? We have some guests, and I have to talk with those guests today because we're going to talk more about data centers. We've been talking more about data centers over the last 5 or 6 sessions, maybe 7 sessions, and everybody is really getting shall we say, a little bit upset over the way the data centers are coming about. And some people are saying, well, we have one in Sydney. They're going to put one in. Well, what are they going to do with the water? How much water are they going to use out of the Great Miami River? How much power is it going to take to run this thing? And then in Piqua, we went ahead and the city commission decided, oh, it's a good thing. We'll take the money and run. Well, they did. Now they've torn down a whole bunch of trees and dug up a bunch of farmland. And local people aren't too happy about that. So you have politicians involved. You have big money involved. And the ecology is going to be involved. And you're going to have problems. But I have three gentlemen today. And two of them you know, one of them you don't know. And we have Barry Blankenship, and I'll go ahead and bring in Barry. You know him from last time. And then we have Quentin, better known as Santa. You get teased quite a bit like that.
And here's my drink. It's water.
Well, good. We'll have a toast.
Same here.
Oh, no. No, three waters. Okay. And we have our guest from Hilliard, Ohio, which is Paul Lambert. And here's Paul.
Hi, good evening.
And we have a lot of things in common. It's called data centers. Now, Paul, in Hilliard, you have one already built there, correct?
We have three.
Three? Holy cow. Now, what type of noise and problems are you having?
Not much, actually. I may dispel some of the concerns people have here, but Barry and Quentin visited us not long ago, and Barry came up during the evening, and we went over to one of the Amazon data centers here, and I joked that as we were standing there trying to detect what the sound might be, a Tesla went by, and the Tesla actually made more noise than the data center.
That is for sure.
My neighbors have done Tesla.
Yeah, they've done a pretty good job here. They're not noisy. I can't speak, you know, the concentration of data centers here in Columbus. We probably have over 100 data centers in greater Columbus now. And the bigger ones are actually by Google and Meta. And I can't speak to how noisy they are, but the Amazon data centers here in Hilliard aren't particularly noisy at all.
Now, do you have any other problems? Like, for example, providing fire service?
There's I at one point was the fiscal officer for our township here. So I worked pretty closely with the fire department, and the chief's a good friend. I was talking to him just yesterday, and he was mentioning that some of the issues with fire here is that Amazon is so restrictive that they won't let the firefighters in once the building permits are issued. They had to let the firefighters, the fire marshal in to do the inspections for the building permit. But after that, they've been told, hey, we've got some buildings here that we're just not going to let you come into. So there's, you know, they certainly have some concern that if a fire happens there, they may not be able to fulfill their life safety obligations. But otherwise, you know, they're not particularly a fire hazard. They haven't been so far anyway.
Well, speaking of fires, they had a big one in Dayton, actually in a suburb in Moraine, which is the south part of Dayton. The Fu Yao Glass Company caught fire the other night, and it burned all night. And it, somehow the roof was ignited. And they still haven't figured out what caused it, but it was one big blaze.
Yeah.
And it was, let's put it this way, they were still putting it out the next afternoon. So yeah, with the data centers, that kind of worries me a little bit.
I should do a little disclaimer here is that I spent 30 years in the technology industry, and I worked for a company called CompuServe, which of us with grandfathers may remember them. I retired, my last job at retired was I was the vice president and general manager of the web hosting division, which is the group of MCI WorldCom that actually built large-scale data centers around the U.S. and the world. So I'm pretty familiar from the technology standpoint, what goes into building and operating one of these large data centers. Again, I'll admit that these are an order of magnitude larger than any of the ones that I was involved in before I retired, but the general concepts remain the same. And then something that maybe has been helpful is that I served three terms on the school board after retiring here in Hilliard, and as I mentioned, also as a fiscal officer. So I've had a chance to experience what it's like on the board side of the dais in our community. So I think it's kind of a unique perspective that, you know, I hope it, you know, I can help people think through some of these things.
I remember CompuServe when I lived in Upper Arlington.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
It was just
so that building now, if you remember the original campus there, that building has a historical marker on it now for being the place where the online world was kind of invented.
Yeah. I'm familiar with that area. Quite a bit. I spent a lot of time in the Columbus area and Cincinnati. Those were my two big areas. But anyhow, did you go to that symposium they had at or town hall at the University of Cincinnati?
I did, and I was one of the speakers.
And what did you speak on when you were there?
It was really what's life like after a data center shows up. That, you know, most of the people there were trying to think about what it means to have a data center come to their town. And the opportunity I had was to say, well, they have come to my town and this is what our experience has been. And, you know, we could talk both about the resources used and also the, you know, there are some real benefits to our town. You know, one part of the, you know, what I said is when these guys go out looking for site selection, something again that I, you know, I did in my career, you have a few key criteria. And for these guys, it's pretty straightforward. They're looking for abundant and hopefully cheap land, although they're willing to pay pretty stupid amounts of money for it. They need abundant power. Used to be the telecommunications was important for AI data centers. That's not as important. And then the fourth one is they need naive local governments that'll give them stuff that that they ask for. And so part of my pitch in Cincinnati was don't be afraid to ask them for a lot. I had a boss once who said, you keep negotiating until nobody's smiling. And I think too often the data center guys walk out with a big grin on their face. And we need to be not afraid to ask them for stuff until they quit grinning. And it can be a lot of money. I said, you know, ask for fire trucks, ask for 10 school buses, ask them to build you a new high school. Make sure you get them to actually contribute and not expect that it's going to come through income taxes because there's just simply not enough employees to do that. You have to ask them. And there's nothing that's off the table. As long as it's not illegal, ask them for anything you want.
Well, I'll tell you what, here in PICWA, they had non-disclosure agreements. And the NDAs were, every time they would ask, well, who's coming in or what's going to happen with land and so forth, they wouldn't say anything. Yeah, and the city commission was that way.
Yeah, that happened here too. So they came here 10 years ago. And I was sitting on a school board then and had no clue that those negotiations were going on because they convinced our school board president and the superintendent and the mayor of the city and the chair of the trustees that these NDAs were keeping them from saying anything. I'd contend, and it says pretty much as this in the Ohio Yellow Book, if you're familiar with it, the Sunshine Law Book, I think it's on page 58 or something like that, that in essence says, the existence of an NDA does not override the open records laws and the open meetings laws.
Sunshine laws.
And so I think, you know, these data center operators have people scared into, you know, what the NDAs may mean. But I really wish we had, or I hope somebody going forward brings a court case and gets an explicit judgment that says these NDAs are already illegal under Ohio law.
Oh, let's see, Barry, I think we were kind of chatting a little bit about temporary restraining orders.
Yeah, we were talking about that a little bit earlier. That's what Wilmington is going through right now. So Clinton would know more about that than I do. I was just going off what I read from Jessica Sharp's page. So
hopefully I can talk about that just briefly. What happened is the Planning Commission popped the special meeting on the data center site review plan 2 days ago. And not enough time for the public to review what they're presenting. And they put on the agenda that no public comment would be accepted. And they had one of the agenda items was to take action. So Jessica worked with the attorney that she's working with on some other issues. And they put together a motion for a TRO and filed it this morning at court at 8 a.m. So when the courthouse opened, it was filed. They reached a mediated solution with the city of Wilmington, where the city of Wilmington agreed not to vote on anything at the Planning Commission. And that meeting was over probably about 3 hours ago. I didn't attend, but I'm going to watch the video here lately. And it goes back to what you were just talking about, the NDAs. There was a lot of "we don't know, we don't anticipate, we can't tell you" comments there. And that's some of the stuff I've been talking about this week. If it's such a good deal, why can't you tell us?
Well, that's right. Go ahead, Barry.
You know, Sunshine Law only has, you know, there's only a certain set of circumstances where you have to keep stuff confidential, you know, in an executive session, for example. And one of those has to do with trade secrets, but it's hard to make the argument that the financial negotiations between the two parties is a trade secret. They try to blend it into the NDA and say, you know, we're going to be telling you secret stuff. And that's true. And it's reasonable for that stuff to be kept confidential, but not, again, not the financial arrangements.
Well, it, you know, and I think Paul's touched on some good points right there. You know, there would be things like the particular chemicals that you're using to treat the water with that you're going to be using for the cooling systems. I happen to have used to work for Ecolab. Ecolab makes and sells those things. So you can go out to the internet and find out. Ecolab does tweak them for the specific customers and the water conditions that they are in. But there's things like that. You know, how much water are they going to need to cool the plant? I would say that would probably be a trade secret, but they have to disclose enough information so the city can plan.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
We weren't disclosed hardly anything because everything here was supposedly done because of executive session. We kept trying to ask about the project. We kept trying to ask different things about health, safety, environmental impacts. We can't discuss those. That's all executive session. So they really held all their information close, didn't disclose any to us. We went through records request acts. We got some, started getting a little bit more as the project got closer to being full reality. But I know there's a bill coming through the House to try to end all NDAs. I don't think that solves the problem for a lot of our communities. I think it's also these communities need to realize that they will use the executive session, which, like Paul and Quentin have said, there's some things that, yeah, general public doesn't need to know. But there's a lot of information they could disclose to us to where we can make better informed decisions about what's going on, right or wrong. And it would help us out, maybe help them as well to figure out, hey, is this really good? Is it bad? We might want to do this instead of what you're doing there, or we can help these city councils and city managers out instead of them trying to do it on their own.
What really pisses me off about the NDAs, I had a whistleblower tell me that NDAs were being prepared and signed last year, in May of 2025. And so I put in a public record request for a copy of the NDAs. About 3 months later, I get a note back says, "We can't find anything because we don't file by NDA." They just flat lied to me. And I'm still waiting on at least two NDAs, one's for the mayor and one's for a council member. But what's interesting is they went through and made all these adjustments to the zoning code. They were run by the planning commissioner, and on the planning commissioner is the mayor, who had to have signed an NDA. If he didn't, I don't know why he wouldn't know, because his public service director signed an NDA and he was on the planning commission. So they were making changes to the zoning code to allow data centers by right and light industrial, and not telling anyone, not telling the rest of the planning commission members. And that's just flat wrong. It is just flat wrong. One of the things I have noticed in the NDAs that were signed by them under Ohio ORC, all agreements are supposed to be reviewed as to form by the city's law director. Wilmington does not have a law director right now. Now, they have an assistant law director, but there is no review as to form. So my contention, if I wanted to push it, would be all those NDAs are invalid. They don't meet Ohio state law.
Well, and I'll tell you what, here in Piqua, everything had been kept silent. And they said, well, we have a non-disclosure agreement. We can't tell you. We can't tell you. And then they turn around and they're going to have a emergency vote legislation on a data center. There wasn't any emergency, but the legal staff, from what I heard from the company that was trying to acquire the land, said, well, you can go ahead and do an emergency legislation. Well, they went ahead and did it with very little public discussion because it was done so quickly. And then the questions came afterwards, and the commissioners that were on the commission at the time that this was voted on, the mayor is no longer mayor. His term was up. And one other commission member left. And there's still a lot of touchy feelings around here about what was going on with the commission. So much more that the citizens went before the commission. I believe it was this last Tuesday or the prior week, and they were kind of presenting a list of things that they would like to see happen, as far as not only with the commission but how things are done. And wouldn't you know it, the city manager decides to up and retire. He says, I've had 35 years and I'm going to retire. I wonder what kind of mess he's got us into. So we have to figure out what's going on, and we're stuck because we're going to have a data center. Matter of fact, we'll have two of them. And the city of Piqua will supply the power for the construction, and then they will switch over to AES to provide all the power, because Piqua's on its own power system. And then the water comes in from the Piqua plant, which can do two million gallons a day, no problem, because the capacity is 6 million gallons a day. And we could turn around and supply Sydney with their water if we wanted to. And at one point they were talking about it. All we had to do was just acquire another piece of land for basically a lake is what they were going to pick up, a small lake to supply supplemental water. But then once Piqua supplies the water to the data center has to have it treated so it comes back to the city of Piqua and goes through their treatment plant before being discharged in the Great Miami River. So that's going to be interesting. And especially when Sydney up to the north they said they were going to take theirs out of groundwater. Now, I don't know how that's going to work out. But if they do that, then what's that going to do to the farmland around there, taking out, let's say, 2 to 3 million gallons a day out of the ground aquifer? And in this area, we have a lot of aquifer. And it's amazing the size of the aquifer that we've got, because, I mean, it goes practically to Bell Fountain, Ohio. And then it goes almost to Indiana, and then it goes down towards Dayton, just north of Dayton is where it basically stops. But Sydney's going to have a mess, because they're going to have to discharge somewhere the waste, I don't know, what do you call it, effluent?
Effluent.
Yeah, the wastewater. And so I don't know if the Sydney plant can even treat it. So they're talking up there. They've had a lot of meetings and stuff, and it's gonna be interesting what happens in Sydney. And if they're using water eventually out of that aquifer, and Pick was taking water out of our lakes that we've got, plus the river, what's going to happen to Troy to the south, Vandalia, Tip City, and down to Dayton when you're taking all this water out?
I saw an article the other day. I just saw the headline and read briefly first few paragraphs, and it talked about Columbus is sinking because of all the groundwater that's being withdrawn from the aquifers there for the data center.
Excuse me.
One of the ideas that came out of the symposium on Saturday was the idea of recycling the water. So I had written something up today about doing that, and I've certainly seen it done in other communities as well, you know, not for data centers, but just for the wastewater that comes in, you treat it, and it was used for the landscape around the city. You know, they call it putting in purple pipe, because recycled water goes into purple pipe, is separated from the potable water. And this was out in California where I saw this happening, because water's a big deal out in California. There's a perpetual shortage, it seems. So you look for as many ways as you can to reduce and recycle.
It's that way in Florida.
Yes.
Because in Clearwater, they had recycling stations, and then you would see the purple pipe, and it was all up and down the beach, and they had to recycle their water, because in that area, you know, I thought Clearwater Beach wouldn't be too bad of a town, maybe 500,000 or something like that. And they say, well, it's about 1.5 million just for Clearwater. And then you have all the stuff up and down the beaches, and you're thinking, how can they have that many people? Well, all of the high rises is part of the reason, right? The density and so forth. Hey, in Hilliard, how do they handle the water there, Paul?
So something worth talking about is that there's really two generations of data centers out there that when Amazon first came here, they were building 10 years ago, they were building their first generation of data centers. And by first generation, I mean that the applications running in those data centers were things like Netflix and eBay and, online retailing, corporations, private, you know, IT infrastructures, those kinds of things. And in those days, they were really keen on talking about a thing called PUE, power utilization efficiency. And it's a ratio of the total power of the used by the complex versus how much of that is used just by the computing equipment. And so if that PUE was 2, for example, that means they're using just as much power for the building, cooling, and so on, as they're using running the equipment. If the number was 1, that means they're using all the power for the computing equipment. So Amazon bragged a lot about trying to get that number as close to 1 as possible, and said in recent years they were as close as 1.13. Well, how do they get there? They were doing that primarily by cooling these data centers. And by the way, it's not like the old days when I got into the business and you cooled your data center to 70 degrees or less. Today they run them at 80 or 90 degrees. because they figure it's, even though the equipment is less reliable at that temperature, it's actually cheaper to replace broken computers than it is to run a 70-degree, you know, mechanical air conditioning plant. So they use these things called swamp coolers, evaporative cooling, where they evaporate the water in large volumes. So when they built the first data center in Hilliard, they also had installed the largest single water line that we have in Hilliard run to that plant. And I couldn't guess what the number is. My guess is they evaporate a lot of water out of that facility. Bad news is it's going into the atmosphere. Good news is it's not going into the waste treatment system. Now these new centers they're building for AI workloads, the NVIDIA chips, and in essence that one big building, instead of running a whole bunch of different applications, they're often running just one training job, like a giant batch job. Some of them run for several days. I've heard that the ChatGPT training run was a couple of months of one of these big supercomputer centers, and they generate a pile of heat. For those, they have to get the heat off right at the chip level. Most of them are using water cooling right to the chip level. And the only way to get that much heat out of the building is with mechanical air conditioning. So they may be using water in cooling towers, but usually in a cooling tower application, you actually recirculate it. You evaporate a little bit in the cooling tower, but you capture a lot of it and it recirculates. So I don't know this for a fact, but I think these AI data centers, that at least the ones Amazon building around here, seem to use a lot less water. Every data center builder is a little different. Some may use more evaporative cooling. Some may use open loop cooling, where, you know, cold water in from the outside and they dump hot water out, or they may pre-cool the water in a cooling tower or whatever. Those can use an enormous amount of power. So I think whether or not water consumption is going to be an issue depends on the particular data center operator, what they're going to run in there, and what technology they're choosing to use for cooling. But mechanical air conditioning is increasingly important to these guys. And you don't hear them talking about PUE anymore, because I think they're using an enormous amount of power. They're probably using at least as much power for cooling as they are for running the technology.
Mm-hmm. Paul, on Saturday, I can't remember if it was Ben or Prescott who mentioned it, says even if the local data center is not using a lot of water is still being used because of the electrical generation that has to happen if they're not using the water cooling or the evaporator.
Yeah, I thought that was a really important point. Yeah. With water, it's true, right? Because we've got one of the largest data centers here in the region is Meta, and they're even building a larger one that they call Prometheus. That's going to be a 1 gigawatt data center. And they're going to power it apparently with gas turbines. So, you know, no water in that generation process. And they're also going to augment it with small modular reactors. You may have heard the story that they're going to start putting these things in down at Piketon, where the gaseous diffusion plant used to be. There was also an announcement that I believe they're putting in a 10 gigawatt gas turbine, probably a combined cycle gas turbine facility there as well. So enormous amount of power being generated. Again, the amount of water being used is not exactly like an old coal-powered, steam plant. But it's still a chuck. That point still has some validity.
I know about a lot of things with Piketon, because I used to work for the state, and in our division, they wanted to have vending machines at Piketon, and they wanted a food service down there. Well, through our business enterprise program with the visually impaired individuals who run the facilities, we went down to take a look at it. And then we started talking about it. What are we going to do with all this investment that we have to put in equipment and, building and so forth? If they have to close the plant, we can't take the equipment back. It has to be destroyed. So we said, no, we turned it down. And it was just as well, because I don't think we could have found a manager to handle that facility. We had another one at Fernald, which was, everybody thought that was
Purina dog food, right?
Purina dog food because the red and white checkers on the building. Yeah. And it was it was festooned with tritium ponds and all kinds of good things. And they wanted us to put some stuff in there. And we finally outsourced it and we took a percentage of it because every piece of equipment that was in there when they tore Fernald down had to be destroyed and it had to be shipped out someplace out west. So there's a little bit of Cincinnati, Ohio out west.
I had the experience of working for Kerr McGee for a year and spent about 2 months at a uranium hexafluoride plant and had to wear a badge and get it scanned and take a urine test every 30 days to make sure I hadn't accumulated too much radioactivity.
Yep. So I'll tell you what, sometimes I can tell you some horror stories of putting in bids for different types of facilities. But anyhow, there are a lot of people that are still concerned about data centers going in. I know that they are up in Sydney. And I think what they're doing in Sydney, as far as the cooling, they are going to have cooling ponds. Because on one of the plot sketches showed a couple of ponds or lakes to cool the water. So that's their problem. In Piqua, people are worried about the noise and the traffic. I mean, it's the traffic is going to be so bad on Washington Pike, which connects Piqua and Troy. If you don't take the interstate, you take Washington Pike. And or 25A, and the traffic's going to be so bad, people are going to have to drive the interstate just to keep from taking the short distance on Washington Pike. And they're even going to be putting in a roundabout, which may lead to another roundabout beyond that. It all depends on if the county gets involved or ODOT gets involved. Who knows? ODOT can mess up a one-car funeral from what I've heard and what I've seen. But anyhow, there's a
lot. I can say here again that the traffic issue is probably overstated, that as the three data centers were being built here, we certainly had things like dump trucks and so on hauling materials. And occasionally you'd get a truck with a delivery of materials, but you know, it wasn't that much during the period that the, you know, they were still creating the pads for the building. You know, there was a lot of mud around, and that was annoying, but, I think the traffic concerns can be overstated. And once the data center's built, there's virtually no traffic. I think there's these things that come up. Here's kind of my take is when you kind of have this hysteria over things that, perhaps aren't true, then the people who are the decision makers just quit listening. There are some real points that are worth talking about. And it's things like what is the real economic benefit? Let's talk about what the real water consumption is and how that's going to be dealt with. Let's talk about the real things and keep all these kind of peripheral items off the table, because that just gives gives the elected officials reason to just not listen. They get tired of the hysteria that goes there. And I don't mean to demean people who are bringing up these things, but if the desire is to get a particular outcome, those don't help.
No, but it's the fear of the unknown. And if everything would have been explained in the beginning, coming out forthrightly, the big word, so that the people would know, okay, we're getting a data center. And it's going to do this, that, and the other. This is the location. Everything will be taken care of. And you won't have the problems that you're thinking about.
Right.
Calm people
down.
Well,
that comes right out of the playbook from these guys, that they've done enough of these around the country. If you remember my four selection criteria, number four was a naive local government. Mm-hmm. So they're counting on that. They're counting on being able to scare these guys or to entice them with, you know, some big dollar figures. And I think you know, the primary education we need to do is to tell these governments, you have a lot more power, and it's going to come out badly for you if you hide things. You know, as I said at the presentation on Saturday, be a hard-nosed negotiator. Tell them what you want. Tell them what you want to talk about, and what's the worst thing that happens. They say, we give up, we leave, and then you don't have a data center. So make sure that if you're going to let the data center in, that you get everything you want, including full disclosure from the get-go.
I had planned to be in Cincinnati for that meeting. And we had a reconsecration of the Sydney Masonic Temple. And as an officer in that temple, I had to be there. And I couldn't get out of it. And I thought, okay, if I plan this right, and it starts at 9 o'clock, and we're out at a certain time, I can be down there by 1 o'clock. Wrong. It went over and over. So there's no way I could have made that meeting. And I probably would have missed half of it. So yeah. I'm sorry I missed that one.
I missed Paul's talk because I had to duck out for a memorial service.
I'll send it to you on video.
All right. Thanks, Barry.
I've seen some of it, and I think I even posted it on our My Piqua page. So it looked like a good symposium, and I'll tell you what, when I worked with the state, I had all of Cincinnati, University of Cincinnati, including the branch campuses, for any vending or food service operations except the big major cafeterias. And I'm very familiar with Zimmer Hall because I had to put a large vending bank there for the students. And I saw students that were in studying engineering and chemistry and so forth. You thought they were brilliant students. And we were installing snack machines and pop machines and so forth. There was nothing in the snack machine. And these kids would come up and start putting money in it to buy things. And there wasn't anything in the machines. And I'm thinking, my God, these are college students. So that was my shocker with Zimmer and Zimmer Auditorium and all that. But I had that whole campus. It was a fun place. It really was.
And if I can make just one last point is that, sure. If you're one of these data center builders, there's two things that are their primary concerns, and that's time and money. And of the two, the time is the most important one. They've got all kinds of money, but they don't have time. And so if you want to get their attention, do things that slow them down, and use your leverage as a governing organization to threaten with slowing them down. And the thing you want from them are whatever this whole list of concessions are, which are, can all be reduced to money, and tell them all the stuff you want. And if they don't get it, you're gonna, again, slow down the zoning, slow down the permitting, slow down to whatever it is. And again, what's the worst thing that happens is that they leave.
Yeah.
Keep negotiating until nobody's smiling, as they say.
Yeah, and that's a good point. Paul, thanks for coming on the show. Quentin and Barry, as always, thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
Pleasure.
Everybody gets to see this on replay on Rumble and YouTube, and YouTube will be posted on the Facebook page as soon as it uploads to YouTube from our studios. So thanks, guys, for being on the show. We'll get together again and have another good time, okay?
Okay, take care.
Thank you.
Have a good evening, guys, and we'll see you next week.
Okay.